Yeah, Colin, I wonder if you can start by telling me a bit about your history, how you came to live in this area, if you've always been here, and then we'll find out a bit about your farming history on this particular farm.
Well, my dad lived on the farm next door, and when they were going to get married, he bought this farm, Thornsett, in 1963. He'd lived with his mother-in-law for a couple of years when I was born. I was 3 years old when he bought Thornsett. It was 1963, and he was the last farmer in Reno to buy a farm. Since then, there's only businessmen bought farms. I mean, my dad was born in 1922 on Dane Bent Farm next door, on his father's farm, which was a dairy farm. Yep. And my dad started off farming in his own right with poultry. He'd have day-old chicks and rear them up into point-of-lay pullets. And he had 12 hencoats. They were Pilkington, 12-foot by 8-foot Pilkington hencoats. And he had 200 or 300 hens spread out all over the farm, free-range hens. And he could just go around and feed them once a day. And the hens, as they grew up, just roamed wherever they wanted to. They didn't have to shut the pop hole, because there was neither foxes nor badgers native to this area. And in them days, they could make quite a bit of money out of poultry, and he was in a very big way, not like the tens of thousands they have now. And then one day, he went just on the other side of the oak's wood, and there was feathers all over the field, and he didn't have a clue what had happened. Somebody had to explain to him that was a fox. So from then on, they had to shut the hens in at night, and they've got more and more and more. And it wasn't until, you know, around about the 1960s that he knew what a badger was. I mean, now everybody, because you can see where badgers are, where they have a set. There's tons of soil there. You can't miss them when they're on your farm. You know exactly where they are. But they just weren't native to the area. But they've gone more and more and more. And through my young days in the 1960s, we had peewits, curlews, skylarks. Yes, hedgehogs, progs, everywhere. But when we used to mow the meadows, the hay meadows, it was like a bloodbath. There'd be all little progs and things got chopped up in a mowing machine, unfortunately. But now there's nothing. Nothing lives on the floor. The badgers have increased in numbers till about 2013, and I thought we would have about one badger for every 5 hectares. That'd be one badger for every 2 fields, and the whole area is the same. And they've just killed everything. It won't matter if they totally eradicate the hedgehogs, because it won't affect their diet, because they live on grubs, worms, snails and things, and they're protected. We can't do anything about it. You know, if we were to go and shoot any badgers, you'd get locked up and they'd throw the key away. And they've just wiped everything out. I haven't seen a peewit chick for about 20 years.
Did your dad come from a farming family a long way back?
Yes.
Yeah? Do you know how far back?
Well, several generations, yes. Yeah.
And what did they predominantly do in the past? Was it a mix or...?
Well, we're up in Reno here. It is grassland area. So there'd be grassland farmers, dairy, sheep, beef.
Would you say it's a good productive area?
Yes, it's hill. You know, you can't plough any of it. They did in the war, but it wasn't very good. They finished up having corn, still waiting to be combined when it snowed in the autumn, winter.
Right. So is that in this territory where your father's family have been for generations?
Oh, yes.
And what about your mum's family?
Yeah, they were farmers as well, just a bit nearer to Buxton, Macclesfield Forest.
So your roots
several generations
are absolutely embedded in this area. So what's your sort of feeling of attachment to this landscape?
Oh, just, it is my land, it is me. Yeah.
So let's hear about what it was that what you grew up doing as a farmer's son in your early years. What do you remember your dad doing?
I just lived and worked with my dad. Went to school because I had to go to school.
Where did you go to school?
Reno Primary School, and then in Macclesfield. Left school as soon as I could, probably before I should have done. And I've just spent all my life working on a farm.
So what was that, sheep and...?
Sheep and, well, we used to have cattle, but TB's come into the area in the wildlife. We which for me is one of the biggest issues in farming. There's a very big divide between townspeople, the authorities, and countryside farming people. And badgers are, for me, probably the biggest issue that there is, because they're not rare, they're not endangered, they're not scarce, and they're ruining my countryside. And it's the people, for me, that are causing it, because they're protecting predators, not just badgers, all the other predators. And they've wiped out the wildlife, all the peewits, curlews, skylarks, frogs, hedgehogs, little mice, bees, anything that nests on the floor, they're gone. If you listen outside now, there's no sound, no cuckoos, nothing.
That is obviously, that's your observation of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
and
profess.
What do you think about any of the other arguments about the radical changes in farming practice that have contributed to that? Do you not hold any store by that? You don't. Yeah. So this is what.
And for me, in my lifetime, I can't see there's been any changes at all. And we've been in environmental schemes for 20 odd years, and it hasn't had any beneficial impact at all.
Mm.
Because they say it's environmental changes, and it's just words, they can't validate it.
I'm going to copy this article that I read in a wildlife magazine, which does confirm a lot of what you're saying, and that's been my observation as well, that the damage that they do is extraordinary and unrecognised.
Oh, yeah. Well,
By large sections, but there are naturalists, conservationists who've got real major concerns about badger and the impact that they're having. So it's not, it isn't just all the conservation lobby.
No, the Songbirds Survival Trust are now starting saying that it's predators that are keeping them.
Yeah, BTO are going that way a bit
as well.
I mean, even on Spring Watch and stuff like that, they were watching a badger swimming across to get to an island. You saw all that. There's going to be a response to that.
Cleared out 20 nests.
Yeah, it did.
Well, they're a rare bird.
Absolutely.
Well, they're going to be a lot rarer if one badger empties 20 nests at a sitting.
I think curlews and, as you say, you know, lapwings, they've had an impact on all those skylarks, all the ground nesting birds. And the hedgehog. So, you know, I think there's a lot more agreement than you might think there is. Yeah. I think people are beginning to understand that. But there's other huge factors as well. Not in your territory. Yeah, there's quite a sentimentalist view.
Oh, I know.
A very strong sentimentalist view, rather than a sort of hard scientific understanding of what's going on in the whole badger lobby. So I think a lot of rethinking needs to happen.
I mean, they're not the only predators, crows. I mean, I'd never seen a raven until this year, and then there was five ravens sat on a wall, and they're huge.
Yeah, we've got a lot around me.
Yeah. Well, again, they're protected. Well, they're just wiping everything out. And then, I mean, what my point is, all these protectionists then turn around and say, well, it's loss of habitat, pesticide, and intensive farming. And for me, that is the point. That's what really annoys me.
What about the combination of the two? The fact that you don't farm intensively here doesn't mean there is an awful lot of territory. Yeah. The White Peak, for example, sort of 95% gone over to silage production instead of haymaking. And we do just know that we've lost flowers in the countryside at a rate that has caused colossal loss of
I'm just talking
pollinators.
About the little animals.
Yeah, but it has an impact also on mammals.
I mean, we make hay, always have done. And on David's farm, it's all hay meadows. He's got orchids and everything in the meadows. Still no different.
How many people are doing that, though, now?
Well, we've
not many of you, are there?
We've had a hay baler all my life. And the buildings, they're not set up for silage. We can make big round bales of silage if we want. But it won't make any difference whatsoever to the peewits and the curlews. You tell me, when you drive, go on holidays, you go through Peak District, the Lake District, up into Scotland, these hill areas, what habitat has been lost?
Well, I think the countryside comes back to life the further north you go.
Yeah.
It just comes back to life.
In arable areas, yes, maybe it has changed, but not in the hills.
Not in the hills so much.
You know, hedges, we don't have hedges, they've not gone. Mm. In fields being ploughed, you hardly ever see any fields ploughed because, you know, we've only about 2 inches of soil. Then it's stone.
Yeah.
Can't plough it. Mm. And pesticides, we don't use any. If we spray thistles, I go around with a knapsack, and I've been around this year, I had 200 thistles and just individually spray them. Fertiliser, we don't use fertiliser apart from on one meadow to try and maybe get some hay early if the weather comes early. So for me, when these critics use these words, that's all they are, just words that they don't understand and can't validate.
In this area, the point. Your deep local knowledge of here is what I really want to find out about.
Well, on this farm, I rank to be an expert more than anybody anywhere in the world.
Absolutely right.
I might not be an expert all over the country, all over the world, but I know what's happened here.
Well, that's what this project is about, really, is about recognising that the stewards of the land, the people who farm it, are the ones who know.
Yeah.
You're the only ones who've got the real story of what's happened decade by decade. You're the only ones who know that. No one else can know that. Yeah. The thing is that what in your territory, it's very low impact farming, isn't it? From what you're saying, you don't use any fertilisers. I mean, what have been the biggest changes in your farming history from when you were working with your dad? What, in the 70s was that?
Yeah.
What were the big things that your dad talked about that changed around here?
Well, the biggest change has been in the last 2 years when we've had to get rid of the cows because of the TB. My dad only died in 2005.
Did he?
He was 82.
Yeah.
And still working until the very last. So, you know, we're still doing what he did. Apart from the fact that the cows have had to go, we could see TB creep through the wildlife. It come from Cheshire, it came up to Macclesfield Forest, came up to Tors on the corner of Kerridge, it came up to Adlington, it was on three sides of us. And then, you know, it slowly crept through, and our cows first went down with TB in 2015, and we were just suckler cows. They're not beef, they're not dairy. So when we can't sell the calves, with nothing to sell.
You just have a big expensive bill.
Yeah. I'd been calving the cows in the spring, and the cows were making good money. In the autumn, we were selling calves up to £910, £920. The calves came straight off the cows when they looked the best, and we just had the cows in the shed on hay all winter, and we never gave them much corn. They'd have hay all winter and a few brewer's grains when they calved in the spring. But when they went down with TB, we had to keep them, and it was costing about £30 a week to corn the calves. After two tests, we went clear in about January, February, and I sold the best calves, and they made £700, which had been £200 less than they made in the autumn, and it cost me £300 a head to keep them. Well, financially, you can't keep doing that. You have to produce enough fodder for, say, 20 cows. But if you've got to keep the calves, then you've got 40. And if you don't go clear, if you still got them the next year, because you did have to keep them 2 years to try and fatten them, then you'd have 60, because the cows could keep calving. But there again, if that year you go clear, you'd sell them all, and you'd made enough fodder for 60, and you'd only got 20. Well, you can't make plans like that, so I said, well, they'll have to go.
How long had you kept the cows for, right from the beginning?
We had the mothers, the grandmothers, they were all homebred cattle.
You could give a better family tree of the cows than most people can of their own family.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what breeds or mix of breeds you kept?
Hereford Limousine crosses.
Right. And they did very well on this landscape, did they?
Yeah. I mean, we bred them up just the size of animals we wanted. You know, they got good feet, good udders, good conformation, good temperament. They've all gone now. These are three farmers' guardians here for the last 3 weeks. Every week in the farmers' guardian, there's something on badgers and TB.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
Never misses.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, front page. It's the biggest issue there is. Mm. You've got a mission statement, haven't you? Southwest Peat, which says they want to promote trust and understanding.
Mm.
Well, we don't trust the government, the authorities, the politicians, DEFRA, particularly DEFRA in Natural England. We don't trust them.
Can you give us the reasons why that is?
TB is one of the big reasons.
That's the key for you,
because
is it?
Natural England are protecting the badgers. And I've been into it in a big way. Obviously, the TB law came in 1980 or whenever it came in, the 1992 Act. But under those acts, Natural England has the authority to give licences for anybody if they wanted to kill any badgers because they were causing problems. And it's been the same with other birds, such as buzzards, and they won't issue licences. The law says they should, but because it's sensitive, they won't. In the law, there's a farmer's defence, and it says that we should be able to apply for licence. I've got photographs I can show you. Our sheep, if they get overthrown, that means they get stuck on the back. Well, around here, if they get stuck on the back, the badgers eat them alive.
Yeah.
And I've got pictures of...
I know.
The authorities won't issue these licences. Mm. I've had them out here, they've looked, and they say, well, try putting an electric fence around two fields. Well, we've got 44 fields. They do not understand. I mean, they've got people there, but they all come from the towns and the cities. All DEFRA and Natural England's big bases are based in the cities. Wow. And the townspeople were country lovers' point of view. And they will not issue these licences. They won't issue one for me, even if the badgers are eating the sheep alive. So that's why we don't trust them. They are the authorities. And they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So the mission statement of trust and understanding, that's a serious problem.
What do you think, in an ideal world, is the solution? Because biologists and scientists actually believe that the cull, as such, can't work because the chances are that you're going to get TB-infected badgers moving in. If there's an empty area, they'll just move in and the disease could spread further.
They have the TB map of England.
Yeah.
Well, the red bit's the infected area. Well, if you did the whole red area, clean badgers would move in because nature is a wonderful thing and it fills holes.
What do you think about the effort to inoculate them?
Well, that's gone. They can't get the vaccine.
That's right, because the need for human vaccine is greater, of course.
To try and catch all the badgers,
impossible.
It's impossible. You know, they'll catch a few that go into the traps.
You might catch the same one 10 times. Yeah. It's a bit
going down. So if you leave one badger or 10 badgers with TB, it'll just keep going. I mean, there's been no good reason why badgers should have ever been protected. They was protected to stop people doing badger baiting. Not because they was rare, endangered or scarce. They've never been that. And they're certainly not now. They're the top predator there is. And they're wiping everything else out.
What do you think is the solution then, really? Would you just think that lifting the protected status would be...
That'd make a huge difference.
Yeah.
A huge difference. Because then we could sort it out ourselves. I mean, in the past, they weren't protected. And you could keep the numbers down. If you just gassed the set, the badgers would die in the set and that was it. You kept the numbers down. But you don't do it because if you get caught, you'd be in serious trouble. Mm-hmm.
You're locked up for more longer than you would for killing someone.
I can hear your swallows out there. Are they doing all right?
We've got dozens and dozens and dozens of swallows.
Some good things going on then.
See, when we talk about predators, I love the wild animals. We look after the swallows. Mm. I mean, every so often, you get a sparrowhawk come in. And, you know, we might have 50 young swallows around the yard.
Mm.
And the stone barns, they have the little arrow slits. We have kestrels nesting in them. And for several years, they nested successfully.
Oh, lovely.
And then last year, tawny owl took over the nest site. It pushed the kestrel out. And again, the crows attack the nests, even a big owl. But not when I'm there.
No.
And then one of the owls dropped out one day, young owlet. So we took that. He put it back in its nest because it wasn't ready to come out. You know, I do look after them. Well, they're small predators. And in the owl's nest, I've found young swallow chicks because we could go and look at the nests where they came in, the arrow slits. We'd put pieces of perspex over so people could go and have a look, like a viewing area.
Lovely, yeah.
You could just look out to the dark loft and watch them coming and going.
Mm.